Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, April 10th, 2016. This is episode 1278. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter the promo code TECHGUY for 30% off your entire order. And by PillPack, a full-service online pharmacy that combines modern technology, convenient packaging, and personalized service to make your life easier. Visit PillPack.com/twit to save $20 on vitamins and over-the-counter medications when you transfer your prescriptions. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, and all that jazz. All that Jimmy Jazz, 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number if you want to call in and make a comment, ask a question, make a suggestion. 888-827-5536. You'll be talking to Kim Schaffer. She's answering the phone today, preparing you for your appearance on the wide screen to talk about high tech. What's on the agenda for today? I'm just thinking. I know you're not supposed to think in radio. It's forbidden. The first thing I learned when I started in broadcasting, nigh these 40 years ago, man and boy, was there no dead air. No, you know why they say no dead air? And I don't know if this is still the reason. Do you know why, Kim? You're a radio veteran for your youth. You've been around radio for a while.
No dead air.
Do you know, right? But isn't that what they say? No dead air. There must be no silence.
We have dreams of that.
Yeah, I know. I have bad dreams of dead air. You get all wrapped up in, you wrapped up in your headphones.
Yep.
The song's running out. You don't have another one ready. You have that dream?
I've had the dream of pushing a button and it not working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really drilled into you.
Failing on me, which it has. The equipment has failed on me.
I have to thank, though, more modern radio hosts. Like, I think, Howard Stern, Paul Harvey, and others who've used the pregnant pause to great effect, the silence. The reason they said no dead air, I think, for years, was they were... Okay, get this. They were afraid that you, the radio listener, as you tuned down the dial, would miss the station because there's nothing going on there. See, just went right by it. I don't hear anything. I'm going to move on. Maybe it's more true now because don't we have shorter attention spans than ever, really? Studies show that if a website doesn't load within 5 seconds, you just go to somewhere else. You say, forget about it. Haven't these devices that we carry around all the time given us a shorter attention span, made us more impatient? So maybe dead air's worse. See, like that? I do that, all the stations up and down the network just go.
The alarms just
went off. Alarms go off. People go crazy. The chief engineer gets paged. It's the silent. No, there's still a carrier. There's something going on. Just Leo thinking, pausing. I went to a movie the other day, and there wasn't one, there wasn't two, but there were three separate commercials saying, don't use your phone in the theater. This is clearly an epidemic, or you wouldn't see it. Three separate times. Before the movie started, and it was different advertisers, like Coca-Cola. Or was it Pepsi? Was it some soda pop? The ad was, you're here to enjoy Coca-Cola, popcorn in the movie on a big screen. Don't look at the small screen. It must be an epidemic. It must be a real problem with people like pulling out their phone. We're addicted, aren't we? It's actually quite addictive. I don't think
it's gotten bad.
I'm not against it. I'm not against it. I'm not one of those internet addiction nannies. Right? your face will stick that way. Your eyes, you'll. I'm not that. I'm not saying. I'm not your mama. You can look at your phone all you want. Although, I have to say, I was driving down the street. Where was that? New York? I think so. Some guy's just walking across the street, not looking at all, looking at his phone the whole time. And I'm thinking, not, you know, I don't have a problem with that, but that does seem like a chance for Darwin to exercise natural selection. And but he survived. He made it across. Came close. Cab came right by him. We have a doctor in the chat room. There's a doctor in the house. Dr. Mom, she calls herself, Lillian. She said, you ought to see the ER visits that we get from people using their cell phones and not paying attention. There have been, actually, there is a thing called selfie fatalities. Do you know? This is actually real. People doing dumb things to get selfies. There were, let me see, I have to get the latest statistics. 49 people died in the last year. 49 people died while attempting to photograph themselves. In other words, take a selfie. That's 49 people. That's more than got bit, the killed by sharks or light hit by lightning. Of the 49 people, the average age is, what do you think? 21. And 75% male. Because you know why? You see these all the time. The selfie of the guy on the edge of the building, you know, hanging over the cliff. This is an article from Priceonomics. Selfie fatalities by age. And it really soars. You know, 14, 4%, 15, 4%, 16, 2%. And all of a sudden, 19, 9%, 20 years old, 11%, 21, 27%. And then it goes down. Mostly 21-year-olds. I might have something to do with the age of drinking, too. I don't know. And mostly men. 30% of all photographs taken by 18 to 24-year-olds, almost one-third, are, you got it, selfies. Although women take significantly more selfies than men, most of the fatalities are male because, of course, you're not going to just, you're a guy, you're a 21-year-old guy, you're not just going to take a picture of yourself, you're going to take a picture of yourself hanging off the Eiffel Tower. You're not going to just, oh, a dumb picture on the ground, why would you do that? Researchers at Ohio State University found that men who regularly post selfies score significantly higher in the traits of, oh boy, narcissism. What a surprise. Narcissism is named for Narcissus. The was he a Roman god who couldn't stop staring at himself in his reflection in the pond? The original selfie. But not just narcissism, psychopathy. They're sociopaths. As a result, these men, according to this Ohio State study, when they take a selfie, they brush off potential danger in favor of validation and personal gain. But that's being a 21-year-old guy, period. I wonder what would happen if I took a selfie on this train track. How close could I get the train before I'd have to leap? Number one cause of death during selfie: fall from heights. Number two, drowning. What? I know what it is. I think it'd be great to take a selfie while I'm in this giant beer vat. Number three, train. Number four, I'm sorry to say, gunshot. Then grenade. What? Then plane crash, car crash, and animal. You saw the selfie the guy took of him and the terrorist. Did you see that one? The hijacker? British guy. He's on a hijacked plane. Egypt Air hijacker. He took the plane, diverted it, and Ben Innes decided, for reasons no one knows. By the way, what's Ben Innes' profession? He's a safety expert. I think I'll take a picture next to... I'll ask this guy, can I take a picture of you next to you and your suicide vest? The guy said yes, and he posted it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I gotta mail this to the guy who made this here. Simon Clement. Isn't that cute? And he said that he came the day before Bill Atkinson, the man who basically created the Macintosh, came in. I said, you know, Bill Atkinson's coming in tomorrow. What if I got a picture of it, of you and of him? And I did, so I have to email Simon with that picture. Actually, I'm going to send him a Bill Atkinson style photo card.
What is that? Is it an iPad case?
So, no.
Oh, it's just a...
It's a thing you hang on the wall.
Oh, okay.
He took the front off of an old Macintosh.
Remember those.
And then he took Lego and he made the classic watch icon. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Nathan Staten, our musical director, spinning the discs. The phone number is 888-827-5536. You know, I don't do a lot of selfies. Do you do a lot of selfies, Kim Sheffer?
I am anti-selfie.
Yeah, I'm kind of anti-selfies. I feel like it's narcissistic,
it's
I guess.
Extremely narcissistic. Yeah, I refuse.
And yet, if you want to get a lot of likes or hearts on Instagram or Facebook, people, I notice the more pictures I take of myself. My son told me this, who, by the way, is 21. He said, oh, Dad, you don't take enough selfies. You ought to take more hanging from a building. No, he said you'd get more likes if you took more pictures of yourself. I said, but yeah, but I don't want to take pictures of myself.
I don't think that's what people want to see.
Well, no, it is what people want. No, that's true. He's right.
Scantily clad girls, maybe. But.
No, even me. I get more likes when I have when I'm in the picture.
Okay.
I don't know what it means, but.
I can't take a good selfie. Maybe that's why I don't take a selfie.
What are you talking about? Oh, yeah, you have to learn the angles, yeah. The Facebook angles.
Just look weird.
You got to do it in the bathroom in the mirror. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, we live in interesting times. I guess that's the best thing you can say about it. Unusual. But it's fascinating, right? I mean, it's like people watching. It's just, you can't be judgmental. You just have to watch and say, wow, that's interesting. Right? Don't be judgmental. That just, you know,
yes.
Just...
I took a selfie with a Hanu in Hawaii.
A
turtle, but I didn't take it, so technically it wasn't a selfie.
Well, that's the problem, is really the best way to get a selfie is have somebody else take pictures.
Yeah, exactly.
That's if you're, you know, that's if you look at, like, Kim Kardashian or all the selfie queens on Instagram, they're not taking those pictures. Actually, in some of cases, they are. Do you see the one she just did, topless, with Radakowski or whatever her name is?
Emily Radzikowski.
Nashkawawi. Yeah, they had a black bar. You know, they censored it, but they were asserting their power as women, which is not exactly what I think when I... But anyway,
that's
okay.
What's on your mind?
That's not what it was. Not, I wasn't thinking that, but... Let's take some calls. 8888-ASK-LEO, the website. If you have something to say, we have a place for you to say it, techguylabs.com. And no, we don't make you sign up. We don't make you pay. And there's a comment section. We divide the show up into days and hours and questions so you can state your piece, speak your piece. Who should I start with?
I can tell it's going to be a weird day.
It is, isn't it? You can tell. Sometimes I'm in the mood.
Yeah.
And then the callers?
Yeah, and the callers all have problems with things doing stuff on their own.
That's called technology,
and
my friends.
So Doug has a possessed iPhone 6.
Okay. Hi, Doug. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Doug.
Hi, Leo. I have an iPhone 6 that when I put it overnight on the charger, it makes calls on its own. It just calls people on my contact list, some of them that I haven't spoken to for years. And then it opens apps. I'll be sleeping and I'll hear something on iTunes playing, or it'll open a podcast. And last week, It made a call to Uber. My wife and I are watching TV. It's about 8:30 at night. I get a call. This is your Uber driver. I'm outside. I looked, and there was an Uber driver outside. And I went,
What?
Uber. Yeah.
And the phone, you're watching TV. The phone is not near you.
No. I hear it ring, and it's the Uber driver. Said, no, I mean, it's near. It's about, 20 feet
away.
But
you couldn't have accidentally butt-dialed an Uber.
No, absolutely not. And I'm so glad my wife was with me. So you have
a witness.
Sanity.
Yeah, because I'm starting to think, maybe you're sleep texting or something. But
the Uber driver said, no, you didn't do this by accident. You have to open the app, place the call, and then confirm. And I said, I don't know how that happened.
Wow, I don't know how it happened either, but that's a little spooky. I think you may have the case of the first haunted iPhone.
And by the way, I've never used Uber. I had the app like you'd have AAA or something, you know.
Did you? But you logged in and you gave it a credit card, obviously, or it wouldn't have worked.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I did that. Yeah. And they charged me $10
for a canceled call.
Right.
That is weird. You don't use Ambien, do you?
No.
Okay, just checking. People have been known to do things unconsciously on Ambien.
Yeah.
That is very, very strange. And I don't, I guess if you were really paranoid, you could say, maybe somebody's running, we call them rats, a remote access Trojan on your phone. But that seems unlikely because iPhones are pretty hard to hack. You don't have anybody else using. Do you have a kid that uses your Apple account?
No.
Wonder if the phone got cloned somehow. You probably did this. Change your Uber password immediately, right?
I just got rid of the app. I've never used it, so I don't want it happening again.
Well, that's interesting because if it happens again, because now you don't have the app, then somebody has stolen your Uber account. By the way, you should be able to contact.
It calls people on my contact list.
Yeah, that's weird.
I don't speak to.
Do you talk in your sleep?
No.
You didn't say, "Hey Siri, call my old army buddy."
No. No. Good guess, but no, that didn't happen. Anything like that? I don't know. I called Apple, and
they probably laughed and said that can't happen.
They hooked me up to a tech guy, and he was very helpful. And he said, "Well, you must have a bug in your operating system. Let me wipe it out and give you an upgrade your operating system." So I did. I went online, and he took over, the cursor, the screen, and absolutely restored the.
Wait a minute! This was Apple. You were talking to Apple?
Yes.
And they took over your computer, and then they said, hook up the phone to the computer?
Yeah.
Huh. I didn't know Apple would do that. That's interesting.
Well, this guy did it, and...
You sure it was Apple?
Yeah. I went to AppleCare.
Yeah. Huh. I didn't know they would do that. That's nice. In fact, it's nice that they took you seriously, because this sounds very odd.
I know.
I mean, I would.
I'm so glad my wife was with
you. Yeah, no, you have a witness. I would wipe the phone. Seriously, I would wipe the phone. I mean, I don't know what's on there, but something not good is on there. All he did was upgrade it to 9.3.1, probably.
I
think what you need to do is, and I hate to do this, but I think it's a good idea because something's going on, is get into, go into the settings and erase data and settings, like start over, like it's a new phone. Don't back up the phone and restore it because you don't want to restore whatever is on there. I think while I've never heard of this happening, the only thing that could explain it is somebody's got something on your system that's allowing them to harass you. Wipe it, and then change your... Well, you got rid of Uber, but I'd change your Uber password as well. I know it's too late. Maybe you can do that online. Anybody have any ideas? That is weird. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, remove the credit card from the Uber account if you're not going to use it. Have you ever heard of that, anything like that happening? It's a flaky charger.
It's more than a flaky charger.
Oh, a bad digitizer. Yeah, but that's a lot of clicks. You can't just get an Uber by, you know, a stray click on the Uber app. You then have to click again and again. I guess it could be a faulty. Really? This happened to you? Mike had his hacked. So, but Scooter X says, you know, it could be a faulty digitizer on the screen of the phone. It's giving you spurious stray clicks.
Could somebody have remotely hacked into his phone? Like somebody could remotely hack into your computer and start controlling things?
Yeah. I mean, that's why I wanted him to wipe the phone. But I think a weird digitizer might be conceivably part of it. Marshy says my daughter's iPad digitizer went bad and would ghost click. So that might be it. It might be a physically faulty phone, which Apple should have sent you to the. I mean, that is the most kind of random of fixes. Oh well, let's just update your iOS. It must be that. It sounds wow. That is fascinating. Fascinating. I'm still reeling after our first call of the day. A haunted iPhone. It was making calls in the middle of the night. Called an Uber. This seems far-fetched, but you know, there's another possibility. The digitizer. So, all touch devices in the screen, you know, they have a way of sensing your touch. They call that the digitizer. And it isn't actually unheard of that digitizers are broken and give you spurious taps and clicks and swipes. And that is another possible explanation. It's possible that your iPhone is actually tapping itself because of a broken or damaged digitizer. I would bring it into the Apple store and say, here's what happened. I updated the operating system. They're probably still going to make you wipe it because that's the way computer people are. Well, we don't know what software you're running, so let's just bring it back to the way it was from the factory and see how it happened. But if it's damaged hardware, it will keep happening no matter what you do to the operating system. So that'd be my guess. And it's a guess. John in New Jersey. Welcome, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, John.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. Following you since the tech TV days.
Oh, nice. That's getting to be a long time ago.
Yeah, well. Anywho.
yeah, well, that's life. I'm an old man.
You're still on, so I can still fight.
I know, I'm still on, which is good, yeah.
I'm a DJ like you are, but nothing nationally syndicated or anything. I do a couple of local bars during the week.
Fun.
And weddings on the weekend.
Always wanted to do that.
It's fun.
It's work. It's not fun. See, this people think, oh, it'd be really great to be a DJ because I love music so much. But eventually, especially if you're doing weddings, you realize it's not about at some point, it's about playing the music people want to hear, not the music you want to hear.
And it's such a vast age group from young to old.
Yeah.
Anyway, what I'm trying to do is I would like to make an announcement over the microphone or put up a sign that you could text your request to me. I don't want to use my cell phone number.
Right.
So I was wondering if you could, if there's a service, I'm not having a problem paying for it or whatever, that you could text it and then I could look on my iPad and see the request to come in.
You would be paying for it.
Yeah, I have no problem with that.
Yeah, because what they're going to use is they're going to get a short code that they text to you.
I looked at them, and they are very expensive.
Yeah, we should find something that isn't so expensive. There, you know, it's too bad. There was a product that's gone out of business called Request Now that did exactly what you want, but I guess either it wasn't a good business. It was from DJ Works, or no, was that? No, that's the review of it. It was from Let me find the website, because maybe you can go to the website, request-now.com, and maybe even though it's been discontinued, they refer you to somebody else doing it. There's text request. Text your customers. Let them text you real-time, two-way texting for business. As soon as I hear for business, I think for the cash rich. That's the problem, is you don't want them to use your number. You know what you could do?
I tried the Smush Box, which was recommended.
I have a Smush Box, yeah.
Yeah, well, they went kaboom.
I know. I never even used it, and I have it in the drawer now. That was kind of cool, but that was more for outbound requests than incoming requests, although it took both, right? Here's what I would do. I would get a Google Voice account.
Okay.
That'll give you a phone number that's your Google Voice number that can accept text messages as well as phone calls. And you can have them forwarded to any phone number. So you would give out a regular phone number. In fact, with Google Voice, you can get a vanity number. That's what I did. That spells out something. You're going to have to play with it to find one that, you know, is available. But it could be like, you know, area code 401 DJ request line or something. And then you could put that up on a screen or tell people that. They would text that number, and it would then get forwarded to your phone. Is that okay if it comes in your phone?
I don't mind the phone.
Do you use tablets? Do you use an iPad? Do you use anything like that?
Oh, yeah. I have an iPad with me, and I use a MacBook Pro to
Okay.
music.
A lot of DJs use iPads. You can, because of Google, you can use the Google Hangouts app on your iPad to get those messages. So you could actually have them nice and big on your iPad if you wanted.
Excellent.
So that's a free solution. You'd have a custom phone number, not your number, and you could even say, I don't want any calls on that number. Block all calls on that number, but I want all texts sent to my to Google Hangouts to my iPad, and you would get them all.
Excellent.
Okay. Right. Now somebody asked a good question: is Google Voice going to be around a year from now? Google's kind of. I think Google's really blown it now lately, on this particular subject. You know, they keep discontinuing stuff. And, of course, this is the kind of the way – this is their corporate ethic. They don't want to be corporate. They want to be nimble little startups, a lot of little independent startups under the Google or Alphabet umbrella. And they don't want to be like a company, you know, a company that produces a product and continues to produce it for years. They don't want to be like that. And the whole way the companies run is that engineers get to pick what they work on. How about that? Can you imagine that in your business? Your employees decide what they want to do. I guess this works. They pick what they want to work on. The problem is they always want to work on the next hot thing. And then as soon as it's out, they go, and they move on. And you can never find anybody who just wants to maintain it. So you can, I mean, the list is long of Google projects that have just disappeared or been ill-supported. Gmail, thank goodness, is still around, but Google Reader gone, Google Wave gone, Google Buzz gone, and on, and Orkut gone. You can go on and on and on. The most recent one, it's very annoying, is a hardware product, Revolve. This was a home automation hub that was sold for a few $100 and the promise of lifetime support. Whenever I hear lifetime, you got to put that in quotes. Whose lifetime? My lifetime? Mayfly's lifetime? The lifetime of the hardware? What's the lifetime mean? And apparently it's meaningless. Although, boy, if I were the Federal Trade Commission, I'd investigate this one. Because they said lifetime support. They got bought by Nest, which is the Google thermostat company. And Nest has, on May 15th, just going to turn it off. So your hardware just stops working. So if you bought lights and keys and all the remote access stuff to work with this Revolve hub, sorry. That's it. Bye-bye, May 15th. Because Google lost interest. So Google Voice is a great product. It was a product Google bought. It was originally called Grand Central. I've used it for years. It allows me to have one number I give out all the time. And they can call up to five different phones. And it's good for me because I'm using different phones. But maybe you want it to call business and home and your cell phone. That's three phones right there. So if somebody calls your Google Voice number, it could ring those three phones. There's lots of great screening. You could say if it's an unknown number, go straight to voicemail. If it's this guy, go straight to voicemail. If it's in my favorites group, my family group, then give them this message. If it's in my friends group, give them a different message. Handle it differently. It's got all sorts of great call handling. And it has text, SMS message support. And those are also forwarded. I mean, it's a great product. But there's some concern about it. Google, created a new phone service called Fi, and people with Google Fi now have to port their Google Voice number over, and they lose some capabilities. I just worry about it. So I understand people's concern. Google does not inspire confidence. But for now, it's free, and it's great. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You know what? I don't have to worry about anymore. Losing my keys. I love this. I got my tracker. Have you used the tracker? Oh, this is such a good thing. See, so here's what I do. I don't want to lose my backpack or my keys. So I have a tracker. this is good. I'm cheap. And really, they're not expensive. I should probably just get a second one. But I put the tracker on my keychain. See there? That's the tracker. See how small the new ones are? Look at that. And then that's chained to my handbag, my man bag. So, and then you pair it to your phone, okay? And then if, this is so cool, watch, I'll show you. I'll run the tracker software, iOS or Android. And now I know where my backpack is at all times. And then should I leave it behind, I know where it is too. It'll warn me, you know? So see, it says last seen. Actually, that's, it's searching right now. It's the last time I checked. So it's going to find it. It's right there. Boom. And no, there, see the map? Love that. Thank you, tracker. If you lose your keys, if you lose your purse, if you lose your umbrella, if you lose anything, these are smart devices, but they don't make you feel smart when you lose them. Tracker will help you find them. It's a coin-sized device. You saw it. Actually, I think I have one in the package here somewhere. I got two of them. Yeah, here it is. Little thing. And it will locate misplaced keys, wallets. It's small enough to put in your wallet, bags, computers, pets. I got the second one for the cat. Could go right on a collar, right? You pair this tracker, T-R-A-C-K-R, to your iOS or Android device. You can attach it to anything. It comes with a little key loop inside. There's adhesive as well. If you lose your phone, you press the button on the tracker and your phone rings, even when it's on silent. If you lose your keys, you look on your phone and there it is. This is the new Tracker Bravo. It's beautiful. Anodized aluminum. So it's very thin, very light. And here's the cool thing now. And this is one of the reasons they wanted you to buy a tracker. There are already 1.5 million trackers in the wild. And Tracker is Bluetooth, but it also is becoming the world's largest crowd GPS network. So even if your device is miles away, it gets registered on other people's phones, and you can see where it is on the map. The Tracker app records the last known location on a map. And when another user of the Tracker app comes within 100 feet of your lost item, it'll actually send you a notification saying, I found it. It's here. So this is more than just Bluetooth range. This is anywhere. And now as more and more people, if you look at the map at thetracker.com, you'll see on the map, there are tracker devices everywhere. And that means, you know, as more and more people get the tracker, it gets even more and more useful. So go to thetracker.com, T-H-E-T-R-A-C-K-R, no E, T-H-E-T-R-A-C-K-R.com. And get yourself the tracker, the new Tracker Bravo. Beautiful. Now, let me find the map. You got to see the map. It's so cool. There it is. It's on the website. So this is all the trackers. Oh, it's so cool. Go to thetracker.com and never lose your possessions again. Plus, just for you, if you enter the promo code TECHGUY, what? 30% off your entire order? 30% off with the promo code TECHGUY. So go there and buy some trackers. These are so cool. They even have custom laser engraving, so you can put that your phone number on your keys or your cat's kitties. There's a water-resistant case. That's great for the pet collars. You can put it on a carabiner. That's how I attach it to my man bag. 30% off thetracker.com. Don't forget the offer code Tech Guy. This is the best one, I'm telling you. The Tracker Bravo. Look at it. It's so pretty. Thetracker.com. Your search is over. I love that. So I'm going to do a, this is kind of fun. I'm going to send a photo card. It's going to Australia. I wonder how that will work. So this is Bill Atkinson's product. Okay, new card. Yes, you can erase the current one. I already sent it. Choose from photo library. So you choose an image. I'm going to choose this image. Yeah, let's crop it a little bit. Yeah. Choose photo. Oops, no, I already did that. Done. All right, there you go. That's me and Bill Atkinson with Simon's nice creation. All right. And then I go to the other side, and I can choose my stamp, and I have a nice twit stamp, and then I can write a little message. Let's see. Dear Simon, thanks. Whoops. Thanks so much for, what would you call this? What would you call it? The doohickey.
Wall hang? Piece of art?
The Mac Watch wall art. I got Bill Atkinson to pose with it. I should say, as you can see. Because it's on the other side. Now, I want to put my signature in here. You could put stickers. But I want to put my signature. I don't know how to do that. Can I add? I wonder if I can add my signature to a sticker. Bill, I need your help, Bill. Bill's going to come on and give me a tutorial on this. He wants to do a special. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. Donald in Mojave Valley, Arizona. Sounds hot. Hi, Donald.
Hello, Mr. Leo. I got an iMac that's not hot. I called you a couple of weeks ago about the broken screen and about doing the second monitor.
Yeah.
And so I put it in the shop. They put a new monitor in it, and I got it back.
Good.
It doesn't have a command key on it. It just has an Apple key, and I don't know if that's a command key, but I'm trying to wipe the drive.
Yeah, the Apple key is the command key. Same thing.
Okay.
That's been a source of confusement since confusement. There's a good word I just invented. A source of confusement since 1984. Sometimes it's called the fan keys. It used to have an Apple on it, so then it was called the Apple key. Sometimes it says command. Like on the newest Apple keyboard, it says command, not Apple. And has a weird logo that looks like a cloverleaf intersection in a highway system.
Okay.
That sometimes people call it the fan key because it kind of looks like a square fan. Anyway, that's the Apple key.
So I need the reset command.
The reset for your iMac?
Yes.
You want to reset it so that, like, you're sitting there and is it stuck?
No, I want to wipe the drive.
Oh, that kind of reset command. Oh, that's easy.
I've got a password. I don't know the password to it.
Apple, by the way, has gotten a little funny about this because they're afraid of people stealing stuff, so they often require a password for reinstalling. I don't think they'll do it on an iMac. They certainly do it on iOS devices. But here's what you do. You reboot, and while it's starting up, right at the beginning, you press command. That's the Apple fan key. Command, option. That's the key next to it. Sometimes it says Option Alt. On the official keyboards, it does. And then R for recovery. Actually, no, you don't need Alt. Never mind. Just Command R. That's the restore or recovery command as it's booting up, and it will go into its recovery mode. The first thing you'll do if you want to wipe the drive and start over is you'll run the disk utility, and you'll wipe the drive, you know, format it. And then when you do that, you quit the disk utility, goes right back into the installer, and then it'll install the operating system. First thing it's going to do is go online, so you'll probably want to give it a Wi-Fi access point or connect it via Ethernet. It'll go online. It says, checking to see if you have the right to install OS X, which I find incredibly annoying. It can even do it if it's a recent iMac, like the last few years. It can do a network install. It doesn't even need to have a recovery partition or a USB key or anything. It'll actually download OS X from the network and install it. And that's a great way to do a clean wipe on a Macintosh. And I really like it that they do that. That is a nice feature. Now, you know, we've solved this problem. Remember, I've inveighed for years against computers that were sold, Windows PCs that were sold without an operating system disk. That's crazy because it's inevitable at some point you're going to want to reinstall the operating system or the hard drive dies or something bad happens. Then they started putting a recovery partition. Almost all Windows machines, in fact, I think all Windows machines now have a recovery partition where a Windows installer lives on this hidden part of the drive. And they even most of the time will say, would you like to make recovery media, which I recommend you do when you get the new computer, and you can make a USB key that will also be a Windows installer. But that still doesn't, you know, that doesn't solve the problem if the hard drive dies and your recovery partition's gone and everything's gone. You still have to download Windows. But Apple solved this by putting in the Mac firmware built into the hardware, the ability to check the network, verify the computer, and then download and install OS X. So Command R is the key, or propeller. Dark Crayon says, that's not a fan key, that's a propeller. Yeah, it looks like a propeller too. A source of consternation and confusement since 1984. What the heck is that key?
Cloverleaf.
A clover leaf. It looks like none of the above. I mean, we're just saying it kind of looks like a clover leaf fan propeller. What is it? What is the point of that key? It used to be an apple, remember? But they decided, and now they write command and put that weird symbol. What is that symbol? What is it? I'd like to know. Inquiring minds want to know, Apple, what do you mean by that thing? What do you think?
Burke says it's the command key.
It is the command key, but that doesn't mean command.
The command symbol.
It's the symbol for command? No, it's not. Apple invented it. I know they invented it. What were they thinking when they invented it? I don't know. Our show today, this, by the way, if you're going to do that, I should have said this right up front. Make sure you back up your data because you are wiping off the drive. And that prompts me to bring up our sponsor, Carbonite. Nass is next in San Pedro, California. He has the same iPhone problem, and he has a solution to the ghost iPhone. This is good. Nass in San Pedro, you had this happen to you?
Hey, how's it going, Leo?
Welcome, Nass. It's going great. How are you?
All right, I'm excellent. I can't believe I got through. So check it out. I got a little tablet here.
Yeah.
And when I first got a case for it, I started having the same problem where apps would just open up, the screen would lock, and I couldn't do anything about it until I finally realized it's one of those book-style cases with a magnetic strip to, like, kind of close it. Yeah. So what I started doing was I got, like, an extra piece of metal to put next to that to absorb more of the magnetism. Solve the problem. And then what led me to think of that was he said it only happens when he charges his phone.
Yeah.
I believe. And then I was thinking, okay, one of the general principles about electricity is current produces magnetism, magnetism produces current. So I'm wondering maybe he's also charging his phone next to an area that has too much current running through wires.
That's a really interesting thought. Okay.
Hopefully he's still listening.
That's, you know, try not using that charger, I guess, right?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Get a different charger, charge it in a different area.
All right.
If the problem occurs.
Yeah, good tip. Thank you. Appreciate it, Ness.
Yeah.
Are you named for network attached storage?
No, my full name is Nassim.
Ah.
But I go by Nas because it's a lot easier, and I'm terrible with names, so I don't want to be a hypocrite.
Nas, I like it. Not
oh,
Nas.
Yeah, cool.
Not Nas, Nas.
Yes.
Nas. Not Nas, Nas.
Exactly.
Hey, thanks for the call, Nas. I appreciate it. I think you're right. I think that's an interesting... I mean, there's something like that going on, right? It's got to be. It's not a ghost. And really, because it's an iPhone, I think highly unlikely that there's some, Trojan horse, some sort of remote access software in there. You'd have to jailbreak the phone for that to even be possible. That's one of the advantages that you have when you're in the iPhone ecosystem is you can't just put weird software on there. Everything has to be approved by Apple in the Apple Store. And while stuff occasionally sneaks by, it doesn't last long before it's discovered. So it's got to be something other than that. Some weird thing. Okay, even a case that maybe is, doing something, touching the screen or something. I don't know. I've never heard of such a thing, but obviously I believe that it happened. I just don't know why, and there's some other suggestions. 8888-ASK-LEO if you've got one. Or go to the website, techguylabs.com. And thanks to the chat room, I now know the origin of the Apple fan key. We'll explain when we come back. All right, I'm going to have to ask Bill Atkinson. I'm making a custom sticker, but I don't know how. What do we do now? Crop image. Okay. Buy sticker. There's the button. Thank you, Shaker. Buy sticker. Buy sticker. 2 credits. Your sticker is ready. Oh, I like it. Look at that. Oh, that's good. I should have done the mask, though. It's kind of big. I wonder if I can do a mask on it. Oh, can I shrink it? Oh, I can. And I can. Oh, look at that. There you go. There you go. Now we're cooking with polyethylene. There you go. There you go. Look at that. Oh, look at that. Oh, 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 oh. That's cool, huh? Nice. All right. What this does is it prints out a card, like on glossy stock, and then mails it, physically mails it. I don't know if Australia, if this is going to work, but we'll see. Isn't that cool? This is Bill Atkinson says, he's the guy who wrote HyperCard and Mac Paint and QuickDraw and Silicon Valley genius. And now his thing is this. It's an iOS app called PhotoCard. And you can email them, but you can also print them. And he checks them, each of them, by hand every morning. And you can put a message on the back, have a custom stamp. You see, I have a custom stamp. And it puts the barcode on there. Isn't that cool? There's Bill. So I'm gonna start doing more of these as like thank you notes. It does get sent. So what you have to pay for this, it's $1.50, including the 49-cent stamp, because these are oversized cards, so it's 50 cents for first-class postage to mail it. So it's $1 for the print, which is actually good. I think he's probably losing money on that. And then 50 cents for domestic. I don't know what it's going to cost in Australia. So you buy credits ahead of time. All right. I think that's it. Done. And it also checks the address. You know, I'm worried about that. Is that a phone number? 03? It's 47? Oh. I'll fix the typo. Thank you. As you can see, thank you. It's nice to have online proofreaders. That looks kind of nice. I'll hide his address because... Looks kind of nice, huh? And then the other side is the picture. See, that's nice. And I'm going to send that. And I like this. That's my new thing.
Is that your signature?
Yeah. So I sign it on the iPad.
Mm-hmm.
And I made a sticker out of it.
Me?
And then the pen is like just me messing around. But I think it's kind of fun. I can rotate it. Put it right there. What are you looking like that for?
Because you're making funny noises.
You don't like that?
You are in a funky mood today.
Funky? I'm your chunky monkey. Okay, settings, guide, photos, stickers. You can also do speech things, and you can change the font. Should I change the font? Should I make it like... No, I like the typewriter font. I'm not going to make it a handwriting font. They have handwriting fonts. It's got a lot of fonts. Wow. I didn't know you could have so many fonts. Snickerdoodle. How about quick note? There you go. There you go. That's kind of cool. Nah, I like the typewriter font. Going back. American typewriter. That's easy to read. I don't think that's... Is that an Australian... they do have Comic Sans. Is that an Australian phone number or is it a zip code? That looks like a phone number. I must think that... I think that's a phone number. I hate to delete it if it's not a... Is that his phone number? Now, how do I change that? Address postcard. No, I already did that. That's a little bit of an issue. Send postcard by mail. Okay, I have copyright permission because I did it. You have a saving this card will use 3 credits. Well, that's not bad. All right. Good. Now it's going to be sent. It's uploading it all to Bill, and the order is uploaded. He'll print it and send it out. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches. Actually, photo guy Chris Marquardt joins us in half an hour to help us get better pictures. 888-ASK-LEO is the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, if you're listening on the internet, we got a lot of people listening on the internet. Our friend Jersey Fudge listens on the Isle of Jersey in the U.K., but he was visiting another island last week, Antigua, and he downloaded the shows in Antigua. So this is good. We get somebody from the Caribbean and is that Channel Island? One of them islands up there. 8888-ASK-LEO. So thank you to the chat room. By the way, chat room very useful for all of these questions because it's like having 1,000 experts just sitting there. Well, no, actually, it's more like having 20 experts sitting there and 980 goofballs answering the questions. I'm teasing. I tease because I love. If you want to be in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. It's the old school internet relay chat. But if you go to irc.twit.tv, you could also chat in your browser. You don't have to have an IRC client. You could participate. Chat room has submitted to me this Wikipedia article explaining what the fan key is. So that's that weird clover leaf that's on Apple's and Macintosh's, you know, that's the command key. And I was saying, where did that come from? Did Apple just make it up? No, apparently not. It's called a looped square. It does kind of look like, you know, a crochet thing or something, right? Or a hooked rug thing. It's a symbol consisting of a square with outward-pointing loops at its corners. It is referred to by this name in works regarding the Mississippian culture, American Indian culture in Mississippi. It's also known as the place of interest sign in Nordic countries in the late 60s. So if you're in Norway or Sweden and you see a sign with this, it doesn't mean press the key for commands. It actually means there's a place of interest. It's also known as St. John's Arms or St. Hannah's Cross, Swedish, Danish, and Finnish, or the Gorgon Loop, and as the command key symbol due to its use on the command key on Apple computers and keyboards. It is an ancient symbol used in several cultures. So, who knew? It's still used on the Finnish coins. apparently. Apple went fairly far afield on that one. Moving along, Chuck, Studio City, California. Hi, Chuck. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Thank you. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Oh, it's about time. I've been waiting for you, Chuck. I don't know what's been keeping you.
I don't know. I just want to say one thing about the people who called earlier. I believe computers have souls.
They certainly may be haunted. We get, you know, we get our fair share, don't we, Kim, of haunted computer calls.
Today has been especially
odd. I don't know why.
Odd.
Yeah.
Technology has gone awry.
There must be something going on, but I don't know what it is.
Absolutely. Let me. What I'm calling about.
Go ahead.
My wife, computer's hooked up to our internet. It will work fine for an hour, and then it will just stop connecting. It says no connection to Wi-Fi. When I look into it, the airplane mode has been turned on.
Another haunting.
Exactly. When I turn it off, though, it still won't connect. I have to go to restore point a day or two before.
Yikes.
Then it will connect.
Do you, is Windows?
See?
It's a Windows computer?
Windows 10, the latest.
Laptop?
Yes.
All right. Many laptops have a, believe it or not, have a key or button to turn off Wi-Fi, the airplane mode. My okay. Dell laptop has that key. It's F2. And if you accidentally hit that key, it would do exactly what you just described. It would turn off your internet access, your Bluetooth, too.
Huh.
So, actually, it's F2 on one of my more recent Dell. It's on the print screen key. So it could be okay. somewhere on the, but it's on the function key row on my Dell. Now, some computers, there's a switch on the side. You might want to look for that as well. That
okay.
because if you think about it, laptops often are used on airplanes, and the ability to quickly turn off the radios to satisfy safety regulations is desirable. So I would check that.
Okay. I can try that.
It's F12 on Toshiba's. It's F2 on my 2013 Dell laptop, and on my 2015 Dell laptop, it's on the print screen button. But in both cases, at least for the Dells, it's a radio tower icon on the button with little radio waves coming off of it. If you hit that by accident, typing fast, that'd do it. William, Capistrano Beach, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, William.
Hi. I have an... you there?
Yeah. I'm just practicing my dead air skills.
I'm also watching on the computer.
Oh, I'll wave.
I have an airport stream router.
Yep.
And three or four times a day, it seems to disconnect.
Yeah.
My wife uses an iPad, our iPhones.
Yeah, you don't know anything. My wife's sitting here. You don't know anything, Lisa, about disconnecting Wi-Fi, do you? She says it's our cats that do it. but it's not unusual with routers. Routers, if you think about it, and the Airport Extreme is one, although an expensive router, they're really a dumb computer. They're a simple computer. They have a processor, small processor chip in there. They have a little bit of software, memory. And their whole job really is to sit there and receive packets from the internet and go, oh, that's for you. Oh, that's for you. Oh, that's for you. They're routing the traffic. Oh, that's for you. They do other, some of them do other stuff, but that's the fundamental job of a router. Sometimes routers overheat, they get old, they get flaky. The test for this is when that happens to unplug and plug in your router again, reboot your router. Now, you're going to go offline as soon as you unplug it, but you're offline already. If plugging it in and everything comes back, time for a new router.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we have it on a switch, a light switch I can turn off and on. What was confusing...
That may be part of the problem, too. Can the cats reach the light switch?
No, it's up okay. in a closet. Nobody
okay. That's an interesting idea, put a router on. Yeah, well, that makes it easy, doesn't it, to switch it off and on again. The other thing you should also do, sometimes the cable modem or DSL modem, the box that the internet service provider gives you, those can be just as bad as routers. if rebooting your router doesn't fix it, try rebooting the cable modem or the DSL modem. Now, I say reboot, but what I'm really saying is cycle power. Because there might be a reset switch on there, but it's not easily accessed. So just cycle the power. It's harmless.
What was confusing is my work computer, which is a Surface computer I bring home from work, it will stay disconnected when everything else is disconnected.
It will stay connected?
Yes.
Okay. Well, now that you're right. That means the router's not a problem, nor the cable modem, because you're still getting internet on one device. It's all the other devices.
Yes, I was just wondering.
All right. So this is another problem, because rebooting the router isn't going to be the solution, because you're still getting internet on one device. Just the Macs go down. The Windows thing stays up.
Well, my laptop is Windows, and it's Windows 10.
And it goes down?
It goes down.
So just the Surface. So this is probably interference, and it's probably on the 2.4 gigahertz spectrum. You know, Wi-Fi can be 2.4 or 5 gigahertz. If you've got 5, use it. Check for cordless phones, microwave ovens, Sonos. There's lots of network stuff on that frequency that can cause the same problem. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by PillPack. Oh, PillPack. I got my PillPack right here. I love PillPack. If you take vitamins, if you take any medication, you know, one of the problems is, did I take my vitamins this morning? Did I take my meds this morning? I'm always wondering. You know, and for a long time, I actually every week would put them in the little thing, you know, with a little doohickey, Monday morning, Tuesday, and all that. And I finally got really tired of it because it's hard to travel because you got to bring that whole thing with you and all that. Then I found PillPack, and this is awesome. It is an online pharmacy. Takes all, you know, it's just like your regular pharmacy, except they're online. And when they send you your medications, they send them in these super convenient, what do you call them? Pill packs. That's it. Here's a pill pack. Brand new one just came in. So the idea is on the box, and by the way, they also, you know, you can get ointments and inhalers and stuff that don't fit in these little pouches. They'll just come in the box too. But the pill pack box will include your name, date, so you can verify, yeah, this is me. Pictures of every medication you're taking, so you can actually look at it and say, oh yeah, that's my cranberry. Description of what it is, what the prescription is, the dosing directions, everything. And then you just tear off the pouch for that time and day. It's got the date on it too, the medications in it. And by the way, they use imaging technology to make sure you're getting exactly the right dosage, exactly the right medication. A trained pharmacist looks at every pill pack, makes sure that it's got exactly... This is the most accurate way to take your medicine. If you've got a parent or a family member who's on medication but has a hard time remembering what medication to take, you got to check into PillPack. PillPack.com/twit. By the way, it's also a great pharmacy. There's a pharmacist on call 24/7, so you can call them anytime in the privacy of your own home, ask questions, get directions. They use very advanced technology to get personalized packets for every customer, always checked by the pharmacist prior to shipping. They have an image recognition system that makes sure it's all accurate. You can even, you know, transfer all your prescriptions over because everything will come in refrigerated, easy-to-open packages. Switching, in fact, is very easy. You can sign up on the secure site. They'll take care of everything for you, including making sure insurance covers it. And yes, most forms of Medicare Part D cover it. Most insurance companies cover it. And it doesn't cost any extra. The shipping is free. The pill pack is free. You just pay your normal deductible. I love this. And when it's time for refills, they do it for you. They proactively contact your doctor and manage your refills for you. I love PillPack. By the way, if you refer someone to PillPack and they sign up, they're going to donate $100 to RX Art. That's a nonprofit organization whose mission is helping children heal through the extraordinary power of visual art. It's a really nice charity, and it's just another reason to check out PillPack. They do have apps. A medication reminder app for the iPhone and the Apple Watch. PillPack.com/twit. Sign up right now. And when you link, use that link and transfer the prescriptions over to PillPack, you'll get an extra credit worth $20 of vitamins and OTCs just for doing that. PillPack.com/twit. What a great idea. PillPack.com/twit. Leo Laporte, the spooky text guy. It's really spooky time on the show. Somebody suggested we rename it Coast to Coast Tech. Get Art Bell on.
That would be a good idea.
Yeah. Moving along, David in Alhambra. Hi, David.
Hey, Leo, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Happy Sunday. Hey, Leo, I came across this app called Clean Master, and it kind of cleans up all your old bios, browser histories, kind of optimizes your charging system, and kind of, it says supposedly it protects apps from accessing, like, your contacts and what you do. And I browsed around. It looks like it has, like, over 500 million installs, and it has, like, a 4.7 rating on the
Yeah, you know, it's hard to, when something is voodoo and people buy it, a lot of them will say, yeah, this thing works great. It's called the placebo effect. So half a million downloads means to me half a million suckers. Now, remember, there are hundreds and hundreds of millions, in fact, close to a billion Android users. So it's not hard for an app to get a lot of downloads. Oh, wow, 400 million downloads. That's a lot. But not anywhere near the total universe. You don't need this. So, okay, you don't, it's unnecessary.
And all the, it says that it freed up like 1.1 gigabytes of trash files.
Yeah,
and all that.
But those would have been released, okay. Those would have been released eventually by the operating system anyway. There's temp files on your phone that get cleaned up periodically by the operating system. This app isn't doing anything important, and it's doing some things that are bad. It's actually going to reduce battery life, because one of the things it does, so here's what it claims to do: junk files, analyze and safely remove the junk files that take up your storage space. Those are called temp files, and some of them are valuable. For instance, your browser is caching images from websites you visit, and by storing those on your phone makes your browsing much faster. So it'll delete those, and it looks like you've saved a lot of space, but next time you go to that site, it's just going to get downloaded and saved again. Phone Boost. Phone Boost kills off buggy apps that slow down your device and steal memory. Well, first of all, a couple of things to say about that. First of all, on any modern mobile operating system, more so Apple than Android, but certainly on Android too, as long as you have an up-to-date Android. I mean, if you're using Gingerbread, maybe you would need this. But there, you don't need to kill tasks. And task killers, that's what this is, are actually not recommended. They use up battery life. They get in the way. The idea that you should go in there and kill the, you know, the stuff in your recents folder is wrong. You don't need to do it on iPhone. You don't need to do it on Android. And while it won't hurt anything, it will slow down your phone because it'll have to fully launch the app next time you go to it and may use up more battery as a result. So if you have a buggy app that's stealing memory, that's another problem, and nothing's going to fix that. You should get rid of the app. And that does happen occasionally. Antivirus. Don't need an antivirus on mobile platforms. You don't. And they can't do anything important anyway. On the iPhone, no, an antivirus does nothing because Apple doesn't allow it to do anything. On Android, there's a, you know, Android's a little more permissive, but Android already has built in from Google a checker that goes through every new app you install. This just duplicates that functionality. You don't need it. You already got it. There is no, antiviruses can't work the same way on a mobile device that they work on a desktop. They're not allowed to. And that's one of the reasons you don't need one on a mobile platform, because mobile platforms are inherently more secure. They don't allow applications to just kind of run and do stuff like a virus or an antivirus. And then finally, App Manager. Manage the apps installed on your device. Well, but wait a minute. That's called the App Manager, and all Android devices have it anyway. Or install new ones from our hand-picked favorites. Oh, here's how they make money. They have an app store. No, you don't need Clean Master or anything like it. You don't need it on your mobile devices, and you don't, frankly, even need it on your desktop devices. Modern operating systems take care of themselves. You don't need. I know we all want to clean up. You know, fix things up. A lot of us are kind of OCD that way. I want to I'm a slob in real life, but man, I like a tidy desktop. I don't want those temp files hanging around. What good are they? Throw them out. Well, the modern operating systems are really good at this. They do all of this for you. They do it as part of their job in an orderly fashion that's appropriate. And anything you would run in addition to that just gets in the way of that. Don't do it. Do not recommend. Chris, Sparta, New York, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Chris.
How are you doing, Leo?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Actually, New Jersey.
All right. New Jersey, New York. Everything's legal in Jersey. No, I'm sorry.
But we don't talk about
that. That's a line from Hamilton. I don't know. I apologize. Continue on.
I heard it was a good show.
It's a very good show. And unfortunately, it's one of those Broadway shows that's an earworm. You can't stop humming it and singing it and thinking it.
Gotcha. First, let me get my gushing out of the way. I've been a huge fan of yours since the Kate and Leo days back on ZDTV.
Oh, wow. Well, you know what? You'll be glad to hear. Next month, Kate returns.
I heard.
Yeah.
She's probably one of the cutest geeks on the planet, I'll tell you that.
Oh, she's just a gem, and I was so lucky to work with her. I only worked with her for a year, but she's just great. She's consented to come out from her home in Michigan to join us for the 18th anniversary, believe it or not, the 18th anniversary of the launching of Tech TV and the first episode of the Screensavers. It's also the one-year anniversary of the first episode of the new Screensavers. So she's going to host.
You're making me feel old.
Oh, I know. You, what about me? I look at the pictures, the publicity photos we took from the original Screensavers, and I look so young.
You did, yes.
Oh, my God.
I did look them up earlier.
I wasn't young. I was in my 40s. But, boy, compared to now, I look young.
You know, it's just how you feel. It's not how you look.
It's how you feel. And you look marvelous. What can I do for you?
Yeah. What I'm trying to do is my wife now works from home. And me being the tech guy for everybody in the area, I want to make sure that if I'm not home for her and her hard drive crashes on her laptop, I wanted to be able to just have the external hard drive that we have everything back up to, but I wanted to keep a running backup.
Yes.
So that it's...
Good idea.
All you have to do is restart the computer, plug in the hard drive, or, you know, just whatever hard drive is plugged in. It's got a running backup. She can just pick up where she left off.
So there are two ways to do that, Windows or Mac?
Windows, A1.
Okay. So one way is with something called RAID, and RAID 1... which is a mirror disk. So we just built the ultimate virtual reality gaming machine. We put two duplicate 3-terabyte hard drives inside the machine and set them up in RAID 1. That meant we would write to the first drive and it would automatically get mirrored to the second drive. Should either drive die, we could take it out, put a new one in, and we wouldn't lose anything or lose a step. It would still boot. Everything would be the same.
So right, this is a laptop, though.
Yeah, okay. So that's not going to work. So then you need a drive synchronization utility that will make a bootable duplicate clone of it. And there are a number of ways to do this. What you want it to do is run all the time. On the Mac, I use Super Duper for that. I'm going to have to ask the chat room what we use for Windows because I'm not sure. Photo guy Chris Marquardt coming up next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. What do you use, chat room, for backup? Hey, Chris.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. You have an email with a link. Because I want to talk about Phil Collins today.
You want to talk about what?
Phil Collins.
Phil Collins?
Yeah.
Something in the air tonight, Phil Collins?
That's the guy. Yeah, he's re-releasing some remastered albums, and he's reshot the photos for them.
Oh, how fun. No, we want to have, rSync, of course. What I'm looking for is a simple consumer app you can run on a Windows machine that would back up to an external USB drive and keep it bootable all the time. All the time. You know what I'm saying? Not just like as a weekly or monthly or daily backup, but just runs all the time. That's what Super Duper, it doesn't run all the time, but that's what I'm doing right now with Super Duper, because what I do is I have it run on a schedule, and it backs up the internal drive, the internal 3-terabyte Fusion drive, to this external 3-terabyte backup drive. And then if the internal drive were to die in this Mac, I would just reboot from the external drive. Super Duper does that, and it makes it bootable. So what would make a bootable Macrium Reflect? Is that going to work? Let's take a look. But is it continuous? That's what I want, is continuous. See, this is just an imaging program. It's not continuous. right? Or is it? Doesn't look like it is. No. This is what I want. Look, here's what we want. I'll say it one more time. I'll explain it again. He's running a Windows machine. He has a drive connected via USB Thunderbolt something. Mounts on the desktop. He wants a program constantly running on Windows that will make sure that that second drive is a clone and bootable. So that if the internal drive on the laptop should die, he calls his wife. His wife says, my hard drive died. He says, all right, reboot the computer, hold down the F12 key, select the USB drive to boot, and it will boot up and she'll be exactly as she was with every file, including the one she was just working on. Go. Every computer can boot off USB, yes. Maybe there isn't such a program. You guys don't seem to know an answer. Super Duper works great on the Mac. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chris Marquardt's here, the photo guy. It's always, I'm in the dark right now, Chris. I'm in the dark because it's nap time. I don't hear Chris. I don't hear him. Hello, Chris, I can't hear you. I was hearing you a second ago. While Chris is figuring out what went wrong. I don't. Yeah, of course the fader's up. Okay. We'll figure out what went wrong with Chris. Meanwhile, I will mention that we were not able to figure out a solution for our last caller. I'm sad to say. So I'm going to open it up to everybody here. Chat room has failed me. So if you're listening, what we're looking, let me state clearly what we're looking for. And I understand this is a great idea. So our last caller's wife is using her laptop, and he's afraid that while he's on the road, something bad's going to happen to the hard drive inside, and he wants to be able to quickly get her back up and running. Now, I do this with almost all my Macintoshes using a program called Super Duper. So I mentioned RAID. RAID is great if you have a desktop computer. You can use a dual-drive desktop computer. Actually, we use a three-drive, but you could use it with dual drives in something called RAID 1. That's mirrored RAID. It means the main drive is exactly mirrored second by second by the second drive. So if something should happen to the main drive, you just boot from the second drive and you're back good to go. You'd probably want to rebuild the RAID, add a new drive, replace the broken drive so that you'd continue in this redundant state. But this is a great way to operate. In fact, that's how we're operating right now with the computer we just built, the Windows 10 computer we just built. On a Macintosh, I use a very good program I've recommended for years called Super Duper. And Super Duper does the same thing. It runs on a schedule, not always, which would be nice, but you could have the schedule be every hour. It will check the external drive and see if it matches exactly the internal drive, and it makes that drive bootable. So should anything go wrong, he could just, you know, his wife would call up, honey, the computer died. All right, here's what you do. You shut it down, reboot it, press and hold the F12 key or whatever the key is for choosing the boot disk and say boot from the external drive, and now it's exactly the same as it was before. So we're looking for something like that. It's RAID 0, not RAID 1? All right, RAID 0. Whatever mirroring is. I thought it was RAID 1. I thought striping was RAID 0. I'll have to... No, yeah, I'm right. Bob was wrong in the chat room. So we'll continue to look for something else. Let me see if Chris, can we talk now? Hello, Chris?
Hello?
Yes,
hello?
You're back. Welcome. Sorry about that. I don't
you
know
can
what
hear
happened.
Me.
Yeah.
Something went wrong.
Something went wrong. Horribly wrong. Chris is our photo guy. He joins us each week. He's a professional photographer, teaches wonderful workshops. You can find out more at discoverthetopfloor.com. Does a great photography podcast, Tips from the Top Floor, and joins us every week to talk about photography. Now, you said you sent me a link.
I did send you a link. So here's the premise. I have seen a lot of projects where photographers trying to kind of recreate an old photo they took.
Oh, yeah.
Or someone else took, like an old family photo or something. And I thought what just happened is a good reason to talk about things. So what happened is that Phil Collins, the musician, is about to re-release some old albums. He remastered them. And then what he did in addition is he reshot the photos on these
hysterical
albums.
Hysterical. So this isn't just
isn't
one album. He's re-releasing some of his most famous albums. Their remix, which is great because I love his music, and he's reshot the exact photo with his older self on the cover.
Exactly. And I wanted to talk about, what do you have to do in order to do that? What are the things you want to look for if you want to try that yourself?
Like, you might have to match them, right? I mean,
well, you have to match it. Same person makes a lot of sense in that case. They are very simple photos, so it's not too hard to do that. And they're looking at least three different things. First of all, the colors, of course, they have to be the same to make this a good recreation. Some of the photos are black and white. Second thing is
that wouldn't be easy to do, right? Yeah.
That would be relatively easy because you can play with the colors in post-processing. The focal length, like how much you zoom in, what kind of a lens you use, that is kind of crucial to make this look similar. You might be shooting, the old photo might have been shot with a long telephoto lens. And if you try that same thing with a wide angle, it just won't look the same. So
you got to kind of match the lenses. My producer, Jason, lenses, Jason Kleanthis, did this with pictures of him and his brothers. He took the original department store picture and recreated it. But, you know, that's hard to recreate a department store photo. I mean, you're not going to have the same focal length and all of that.
No, but he at least has the same people.
They're all posed the same way. It's pretty funny. Yay, this is a meme, isn't it?
It probably is, yeah. But here's the third and really most important thing, and that's to recreate the light in the picture. So if you look at the Phil Collins comparison between the old and the new photo of the different albums, you will see that they try to really closely match the exact light that was used back then. And that has to do with the color of the light, of course. Has to do with the direction of the light. I mean, look at the shadows on his face and where they've fallen. That will give you an idea where the light was placed. It also has to do with the size of the light source. Like, harsh shadows with really hard edges are typically shot with a smaller light source, and really soft shadows are shot with a bigger light source. So this way you can kind of vary that. And also, if you look at the catch lights in the eyes, the little bright dots in the eyes where the light source gets reflected, that really gives away the size of the light source, and it gives away the shape of the light source.
Now, there's so one thing they couldn't duplicate. The originals were all taken by a very famous British photographer named Trevor Key, but he passed away in 1995. So they had to – this was maybe a little harder than it seems. They had to duplicate his work without really knowing exactly how he did it.
Yeah, and I don't think it's even clear who the photographer of these is, but the photographer did a great job, of course. I mean, it's just it's just wonderful also to see the face at different ages, more wrinkles, and but came really, really close. So that is really a kind of a very cool project.
A great
recreating
project.
Old photos.
Especially for a family reunion, you know, if you're going to be back with the family, or high school reunion. I see people doing that with their high school yearbook photo. They'll try to duplicate it. And if you can duplicate the focal length, the distance, the lighting, that's and then with Photoshop you could probably do the rest. That's pretty cool. Get the background to look the same and all. I like it.
So colors, lens, light. That's the three things.
Now, we have an assignment, my friends, and and Chris is going to be back in a few weeks to look at your submissions. What is the topic for our assignment this week? This month.
The current topic is dirt.
Dirt.
Can't be anything.
So here's the deal. By the way, somebody in the chat room last week said, you know, dirt is inside, soil is outside. But I think we should make this clear. It could be dirt or soil.
Yeah, sure.
You mean anything dirt-like.
Is dirt really inside and soil?
I don't know. Maybe in English there's some weird distinction. I don't know. Anyway, take a picture of dirt, soil, humus, fertilizer, anything along those lines. But of course, we're not saying exactly what you should take a picture of. So it could be the concept of dirty, for instance. It could be anything in that area. And here's what you do. Take a picture. Doesn't matter if you have a fancy camera or your camera phone or a point and shoot. Just take a great image. And once a week, you can upload a new one to our Flickr group. You have to be a member of Flickr. That's free. It's a Yahoo site. You probably already have a Yahoo account. Just go to Flickr.com. Join the Tech Guy group. Tag it with dirt so we know to look for it and upload it. And then in a few weeks, Chris will pick three of the best. And I'm going to try to get one too. So it'll be three of the best and one bad one from your host. And Chris can review them. Chris Marquardt, he's at discoverthetopfloor.com. Thank you, Chris. We'll see you next week.
Absolutely.
Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. More calls, more spooky calls coming up. Nice, Chris. I love that. This Petapixel, the article is in Petapixel. In fact, let me paste that in the chat room so that James can pick it up. That is awesome. All right. Thank you there, Christoph.
All right. Yep. I'll be back next week.
All right. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. It's so dark in the studio because Lisa's napping. Burke tried to turn the light on? Does he not know that I am in control of what's going on in
he
here?
He thought it's they
not...
went out.
Burke's cute. He's, you know what? He's very thoughtful. He's always, yeah, he probably thought something
he
bad
thought
happened.
He thought something bad happened. He's right. Like, oh no, what happened to Leo's lights?
Yeah. Yeah. Macrium will work, somebody's saying. And then there's something called synchronicity. Now she's asleep. We don't want to wake her up.
Because I looked at her and I said, you want me to turn the lights?
No, she's resting. You don't need to see. I actually look much better in the dark. I look younger. Dreamy. I look dreamy. I'm very dreamy.
Mood lighting.
Hi. I'm only 28. I just prematurely gray. God, I aged like 30 years.
With the lights?
With the lights.
Ew. You can see me now.
Yeah, we're not looking for a disk imaging program, however. We are looking for a synchronization program. Well, we'll put all your suggestions in the show notes, and perhaps one of them will stick. Oh, apparently I answered this question. Is there a Windows version of Super Duper? I like, by the way, the choice of the image that goes with this answer. What am I sleeping? Those are all imagers, unfortunately. The one thing missing from that answer is the real time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Man, did we get some answers. All you have to do is challenge the chat room and say, well, I guess you guys just don't know the answer. And man, we got some answers. So a long list of backup solutions for our previous caller that will help him do... What we're really looking for is kind of continuous bootable external drive backup so that it's always running, and at any time, if the internal hard drive on the laptop died, you could just reboot to the external drive and you'd be back up and running. And there are other solutions out there. We had answered a similar question in the past in episode 1178, which was ironically 100 episodes ago, but not the same question. That was how to make a drive image backup, a bootable drive image. But this is with the addition of, I want to do it continuously. So, but apparently we have some, like, I think it's called synchronicity and on and on. So there are some choices, and we'll put them at the website, techguylabs.com. That's not, by the way, a cheesy attempt to get you to sign up for anything or pay me any money. The website's free and open, and there's no sign-up involved. It's just an easy place to put those answers, so you don't have to write them down while you're listening to the show. Stan is in Colton, California, our next caller. Hi, Stan.
Hey, Leo.
Welcome.
Thank you. Listen, I have a question for you. This morning when I got up, my wife had to do some work on the computer in the office. And when I turned on the computer, it said, welcome to Windows 10.
Thank you so much, Microsoft.
Really?
Now, you did get a choice. You could say, I don't want this, but it's already installed.
Yeah, it's already there.
So if you say, I don't want it, it has to uninstall it, and you cross your fingers that it will uninstall properly to get you back to Windows 7 or 8, whatever you used it previously. So it's not a great solution, is it?
No, it isn't. But my problem is, when my wife went on there this morning to print out some certificates for her church, all of her documents in Windows and Word were gone.
Oh, man.
Now, I do have a MyBook hard drive hooked up to it.
Good.
I was wondering if I can get it off of there.
Yeah, well, if it's been backing up, yeah. If you've been running the software, yeah.
Yeah, it has been backing
up. Oh, thank goodness. Boy, that's terrible. Now, normally, the Windows 10 upgrade doesn't delete any data. In fact, Microsoft even has a message, which some have mocked, and now we understand why, that says, in this process, all your files are exactly where you left them.
Yeah, that's what it said on the screen.
Apparently that's a lie in this case. It shouldn't be doing that. It may be, I wonder, you make sure she's logging into the same account. Boy, that's not good. By the way, I have screamed and yelled till I'm blue in the face at Microsoft for doing this. This is wrong. Now you see why it's wrong. Not only is your wife presented with this, you know, fait accompli, it's done. And she doesn't want it, but she seems to have lost some data as well. Thank goodness you have a good backup.
Mm, yeah.
That's very infuriating. So I don't know what to say except that Microsoft's very wrong in doing this. Very wrong. This is inappropriate behavior, so much so that I've frankly taken two of my Windows machines and installed Linux on them and abandoned Windows to the extent that I can. I still have one Windows machine because I need to be able to talk about it. But this is infuriating, unacceptable behavior.
Yeah. Now, there's other than going to the backup hard drive, there's really no other way I can retrieve those files.
I don't. Yeah, I'm probably. I mean, I'm glad you have the backup. There might be. I don't know what happened. It's not. That's not supposed to happen. If you, it gives you this. Welcome to Windows 10, and then you have to agree to the license. If you say no, it will attempt to restore your computer to its original condition. So, did she already agree to the license?
Yeah, she accepted.
She accepted. Yeah. So that's done. There. If you go to, if you hit the Windows key and type recovery, you'll go to the recovery control panel. And in there, for 30 days, there should be a button that says go back to your previous operating system.
Okay.
Supposedly, doesn't always work, in this upgrade, and it's a free upgrade, they didn't charge anything for it. And, you know, Windows 10 is, you know, arguably better than Windows 7 or 8, but nevertheless, it shouldn't do this without your permission. Supposedly, it has preserved everything, and you can roll it back. So here's what I would suggest. You know, before you do anything, Stan, make sure that check your backup. Mm-hmm. And if it's on the backup, make a backup of it. Copy it to a USB key. You don't want to lose those documents.
Right.
She's already missed church today, probably. I mean, it's too late for today. But for future, make a backup on a USB key or an external drive somewhere else so that you don't lose any documents. And then, if you want, you can roll back. It's just that it doesn't always work. I've had it fail on me, this rollback. And if it fails, the whole thing may be shot. And then you have to, you know, then it's got a mess.
Yeah, really.
I think Microsoft, there's a class action lawsuit here. This is not acceptable behavior, for any company to force you to such a huge change to your computer. That's your computer, not theirs. You bought that computer. Did they buy it? No. You bought it. That's your computer, your personal property. They reached their long hand out over the internet and messed with it. And I think that's totally unacceptable behavior.
Yeah, the thing is, I have two other computers that have already been authorized to download Windows 10, but they didn't automatically download those.
Okay, if you don't want Windows 10, and again, you know, nothing wrong with Windows 10. This is not like, oh, they screwed everything up. It's just you shouldn't have to do it unless you say so. There is a program for my friend Steve Gibson called Never 10. He does not ever want to go to Windows 10. He hates it. So he wrote a little program. It's a tiny little download. You'll get it at grc.com. But if you Google Never 10, you'll go right to it. You download it and run it, and it does what Microsoft tells you to do if you don't want this, and it involves modifying the registry, something a normal user should never have to do. But Steve's written a little program that does it for you. You can then delete the program, and you won't see the pop-up. You won't get offered Windows 10, and you won't get overnight upgraded to Windows 10. It just gets rid of that whole thing. So if you know you don't want Windows 10 on one of those machines, get Never 10.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
I am so sorry, Stan. That it just infuriates me. This is totally unacceptable.
And Leo, I have one other little question to ask.
Sure.
Now the document that my wife lost, she has it on a disc.
Oh, good.
She put the disc in her computer, and she closed the tray, and the disc fell down into the CD.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, your wife's thinking, what did I do wrong? Why today? I think your wife should go back to bed right now.
Now, oh. If I try to finagle it out by picking up the computer, because it's all in one, and try to finagle it by shaking it, trying to get
you could,
it.
You risk scratching it. So,
yeah, I risk scratching it, but I was worried about the hard drive. Will it?
Well, I wouldn't turn it on. You're right. Well, there's no other moving parts, but I still wouldn't turn it on. Look on the back. There's probably screws that you could remove the back of, and that would be the best way to get it out.
Okay, great.
I am so sorry, Stan. That stinks. And I want to send a copy of this call to Microsoft and say, how dare you? How dare you do this? You see, these are real people, nice people, who you've damaged by your inconsiderate, greedy, greedy behavior. They're not making money off you directly, but they want you to go to Windows 10 for business reasons. It's about their business, not about you. And I don't think companies that don't put customers first should last. I think they should be, we should just all abandon them.
Yeah, really.
Isn't that shameful?
It is.
I'm sorry, Stan. Please tell your wife I'm sorry, too, and this just shouldn't happen.
Well, no problem, Leo. Okay.
Thanks, Stan. She's lucky to have you. You it sounds like you've been, you know, taking care of her, making sure she's got backups and, you know, yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, Stan, take care. Gosh darn it. What are we going to do? This is like the Google thing where they just turn, we don't want to do that business anymore. We're just going to turn off that lifetime guaranteed device, home automation device, the Revolve. We're just going to turn it off. Companies act like, in fact, it often says in the legal terms that we agree to, you don't own your computer. You don't own the software. You're just borrowing it. It's ours, really. And we'll do anything we want that's good for us, not for you. Companies that don't put customers first do not deserve to be in business. We got to walk away from companies like that. Shocking. Just makes me so sad when I hear that. All right, let's take a break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. And it hurts me because these are nice people. She just wanted the printouts for church. Wake up on a Sunday morning and, oh, welcome to Windows 10. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number. I've been doing this for a long time. 25 years. I've been talking about technology on the radio, answering questions. And I have to say, in all my 25 years doing this show, I've never seen anything so arrogant, so unfriendly to customers as what Microsoft is doing to Windows users, forcing the upgrade to Windows 10. It's shocking. And then their fix is, you can fix this, just hack the registry. That is not a user-friendly solution. Just shameful. And what Google's doing with the Revolve Hub, we got tired of that business. 2 years later, you spent $300, big deal, I don't care, I'm going to turn off the server. Bye-bye. Oh, we said a lifetime? We meant the lifetime of the service. We didn't mean your lifetime or the lifetime of the hardware, just as long as we felt like doing it. There is a real arrogance in the tech community, in the hardware and software community. There's a super arrogance, and it's too bad. It's a shame. It's shameful. And I'm not, I am not here to represent. I think sometimes people think, you're a shill for technology. You're here to represent, the technology and to get people to buy stuff. No, I'm not. I'm here to represent us, people who like and use technology and want to use it better, smarter. That's what I do. And the arrogance of some of these companies is really saddening. There's always been a certain amount of arrogance. You know, engineers often think that, you know, my way is the best way. And users, if they don't get it, that's their fault, not my fault. And I've always said it's not your fault. It's my motto. I've been saying it for 20 years. It's not your fault. If something's hard to use, if it's unreliable, it's not your – as users, we often blame ourselves. That's not right. It's their fault. If you can't figure it out, it's not our fault. It's not your fault. It's their fault. Don't blame yourself. And I hope the tech industry listens a little bit. You know, Amazon became a great success by saying the customer comes first. You would think that that would just be like, of course, that's how you do business, right? Shouldn't the customer come first? But no, they really stood out because they said the customer comes first. They were customer-centric. There were books written about them, how they put the customer, amazing, they put the customer first. Let's try a little more of that. Andrea from Rancho Santa Margarita, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Andrea. I pushed this button. I pushed that button. I don't know if it's me. Technology. You can't live with it. Are you there, Andrea? I think she got scared because I seemed...
Oh, I'm here.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to... Oh, thank goodness. Hi, Andrea.
Hi.
I see. I was blaming myself. I thought, oh, that's my fault.
No, it's my fault.
Nobody's fault. You know what? They make this stuff too hard to use. Even the phones. What can I do for you, Andrea?
I need to spend some money. I want to replace my iMac with either a new iMac or a Mac Mini, but I don't really know the differences.
Yeah. So the Mac Mini is probably not a good choice for you because it doesn't include keyboard, mouse, and monitor.
Well, I have a mouse and keyboard. Don't really care about that.
But you'd have to buy a monitor.
Yeah. I have an old one. I'm more concerned with functionality and speed.
Well, get the iMac. So first of all, the new 5K iMacs have the best screens ever. They're gorgeous.
Okay.
And the iMacs are generally faster. They're not really comparable to the Mac Mini. The Mac Mini is an interesting computer. I think Apple makes it and sells it still for a couple of reasons. It's the lowest cost Macintosh. You can get into a Mac Mini for about $700. But as I said, it doesn't include a monitor, keyboard, or mouse. It tends to be used for servers because it's compact, or home theater. I know people who actually glue them or Velcro them to the back of monitors and just use them that way and make it kind of a poor man's iMac.
Uh-huh.
I would get the iMac. I think you'd be a little disappointed by the Mac Mini. Speed, because performance is sacrificed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, the compactness is nice, but when you add all the wires and the keyboard, the mouse, and the monitor, it's not so very compact after all.
Yeah.
Why were you thinking? Why were you thinking? Did you want to save money?
That's partly, but I have an extra monitor at home. I've got a keyboard and a mouse. But my iMac right now is just so darn slow.
How old is your iMac?
2006.
Hmm. Yeah. 10 years old. That's 140 years old in computer years.
I know.
10 years in computer years is 140 years in human years. I made up that number, you know, because dog years is seven human years to each dog year. I figure computers is about 14, about twice that. So they get old fast. It's slow because, hey, you know, 10 years ago, everything was a little slower. You will be amazed. Well, frankly, the Mac Mini would be amazingly fast to you, but the iMac's even faster still. And you know what? You want to keep this one for another 10 years, don't you?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So that one way to kind of do that is to not get, you know, to get something that's fairly fast. You don't have to get the top of the line iMac. In fact, they make non-5K screens. They make 21-inch screens and so forth. But I would, you know, it's your pocketbook, what your pocketbook can afford. But my main computer now is an iMac, 5K iMac, and it's the nicest thing ever.
Well, what's the difference difference between the screens? Because I've got this 2006, which is kind of a matte screen.
Yeah, no. No. It's night and day.
Right.
It's night and day. First of all, the number of dots, the resolution is significantly higher. Color accuracy is higher. Now, your matte screen is nice for one reason. Apple stopped making matte screens. Now their screens are highly reflective. They're getting better, but they're a little glary. The matte screen was not glary, but the problem with matte is in order to do that, you have to make it, you know, kind of duller. So what you'll immediately see, especially if you can position it so that light from windows is not reflecting on it, is that the colors are richer, the blacks are blacker. It really looks lots better.
It's funny because I like the matte.
Yeah, a lot of people do, and a lot of people wish Apple would continue to make matte screens. What they're doing, and they're certainly doing it with the iPad, the new iPad has a non-matte, a reflective screen, but they've done something to it so it doesn't reflect as badly. And I think the new iMacs may be doing it. But still, you'd want to put it in a room where there weren't lights behind you.
Okay.
You know what I mean? If you had windows behind you, that would really make it hard to use the screen. If the windows are behind the Mac, fine. Do you have a position somewhere that you could put it?
Yeah, windows are to the side. It's no big deal.
Yeah. Windows to the side's not so bad, no. It's just the ones behind you that you don't want.
Okay.
The only reason to get a Mac Mini is because you want to save money.
Okay.
And it's not going to save you that much money. By the time you're all in on this, a comparably equipped Mac Mini is not going to be that much less expensive than an iMac. The iMac start at $1,299. The Mac Mini you want is probably $1,000 at least.
Because what's the difference between flash drive, fusion drive, turbo?
You want flash drives are the fastest, but the most expensive. Fusion drives combine spinning drives with solid state disks to give you kind of a compromise, better performance for some stuff and less so for other stuff. Fusion's fine if you need a lot of capacity; it saves you money.
Okay.
It's really the processor speed. You know, it's going to be so much faster than your old computer that it's just going to be night and day. Go to an Apple store and play with both and see how you feel. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's look at the prices here. I'm really kind of surprised that Apple continues to sell the Mini. They don't seem to update it much. See, I think that's already more than an iMac. Not price-wise, but just more, you know, because you have to buy a monitor. And you don't want to use an old monitor with this. Graphics performance is pretty weak because they're using the Intel graphics. You don't get a distinct graphics card. Let's look. Let's compare. Huh. See, so you can actually... Yeah, see, the 5Ks are expensive. 4Ks, though. Let's see. iMac 21-inch with 4K. That'd be good. Let's compare that with a Mac Mini. And let's just throw in the nice. Oh, we can't. You can only do two at a time. Don't get a Mac Pro. Whatever you do. Biggest mistake I ever made. Waste of money. Okay. I said compare. Oh, thank you. All right. Let's compare. Highly energy efficient. Yeah, you can get an i7 in there. In the Mini. But it's dual core. Wow, they sure do give you a lot of choices. Terabyte hard drive, 256 gig, 512 gig, or 1 terabyte flash. Or a fusion drive. Yeah, you know, the Mini's not so bad. So let's configure a Mini. Let's configure the Mini here. Let's get an SSD. Wait a minute. Well, let's get a good fast processor. Okay, that starts at 1,000. That's fine. 2.8 gigahertz i5. That's fine. More memory though. 16 gigs, right? For only $800 more, I can get a terabyte SSD. That's kind of expensive, but I think it's kind of what you want. Apple HD, you don't need that. You can buy it with a mouse. I wouldn't get an Apple mouse.
Go out and get a $5 Microsoft mouse. You can get a keyboard. So let's not get the Magic keyboard. Get the less than Magic keyboard. All right. So now, $2,048. Okay. Okay. Whoops. And that's without a screen. Whoops. Meanwhile, back at the iMac, let's get the 21-inch 4K. Okay, that's good. Much faster processor. Like it. Let's still get 16 gigs of RAM. All right. Comes with a slow drive, though. You want a better drive. How about a terabyte Fusion drive? That would be better. Comes with a Magic Mouse and keyboard. So, $17.99. That's why you don't get a mini. Right there. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I think the Mac Mini is really a specialty product, just like the Mac Pro. I don't recommend the Mac Pro, whatever you do. That thing, what a bad idea that was. And I bought it. $3,000. Starts at $3,000. What was I thinking? And it was never reliable. Way overpriced. Not upgradable. It's right now it's running as a Minecraft server in my house. It was the most expensive Minecraft server ever. What a waste of money. On the other hand, I love my 5K iMac. It was faster and about half the price. The Mini is a specialty product, kind of like the Mac Pro for users that want, you know, have an idea with some compact thing. Makes a good server, for instance, because it doesn't take up much space. I'd get an iMac. In fact, I just priced kind of a nicely configured Mac Mini. I made the mistake of putting in a SSD drive, and that put it up over $2,000 without a screen. A nicely configured terabyte Fusion drive, iMac, 4K iMac, about $1,800. And I think a better product. That includes a screen. So just get an iMac. Unless you know you need this special compact thing, the Mini. And yes, stay well away from the Mac Pro. I can't imagine Apple selling any of those. I really can't. Even pros are not buying them. Moira in Irvine, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Moira.
Hi, Leo. I actually have a Mac Mini, and I have a question.
Oh, okay. Well, tell me how you like it.
I like it, though. I actually agree with you. I think I'd like to go and purchase a Mac, so a bigger Mac. Okay, so I'm running, I was running Office. The Mac version 2011, I believe it is. And I decided to go ahead and purchase Office 365. And so I loaded it up and I have it running on the computer, not using the web-based Office 365.
Okay.
And so when I go to contacts or when I went to contacts and try to do a search, instead of a single circle that they have, I would get hundreds of these circles. And I could not search. Like, one contact would come up, and then there would be nothing else but the single contact. And I couldn't get into any of my contacts. So I called Microsoft, and initially they said, oh, this is just an indexing issue. So we spent hours indexing.
Hmm.
Did not fix the problem. And then they did a lot of research, and they said, we think that this is a bad user. Your user is there's some problems with your users.
Of course, it's your fault, isn't it? Yeah, not our fault.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I created a new user.
Oh,
and
oh no. Oh, no.
I left my other one there.
Actually, this is a good diagnostic in general for Macintosh. Just create a new profile and see if it happens in both user accounts. Okay, all right.
Okay, so I did that, and it worked. Voila.
Yeah. So there's something going on in your profile.
So then they said, call Apple to finish it off, to do the next step. So I call Apple, and Apple says the best thing to do is to reinstall everything.
Ah!
Make a time machine backup, and then reinstall everything. I'm extremely nervous about doing that because I think that I'm just going to be reestablishing the same problem that I had before.
Yeah,
I
wish they could figure out what's going on. It's unique. So a great diagnostic. And a really helpful tip for Macintosh users, whenever I set up a new Macintosh, I create another account that I don't use. And that, you know, I call it ghost in the machine, because if I'm having a problem, I can always log out of my account and log into that account and see if it's something that changed in my account. But because you want to localize it. And so that's what they had you do. And sure enough, whatever's going on is happening in your account, but not on the machine as a whole. So it could be an index. Those indexes are local to your account. It could be software that you've added or installed, or software that you're running that's incompatible. And Apple's response is exactly the response you're going to get from any computer company, because they don't want to deal with your unique situation. That could take a long time for them to figure out what it is that is on your system, on your login, that's weird. So what they just say is, well, if you reinstall everything, then at least we'll know, you know, what you'll be in a known state, and we can diagnose it from there. But that is a kind of, for them, easier, for you, harder, isn't it?
Correct.
You'd really like to know, well, what is it? Is there one little thing I can change? One little thing that happened. Unfortunately, I'm kind of in the same boat as that Apple tech guy. You know, without actually sitting down at your computer, I can't tell you what's going on. That is a time-consuming process, because you got to kind of, it also takes quite a bit of intuition and knowledge. You have to know where to look. And I'm afraid I don't use Outlook. I do use Office 365, but I don't use Outlook. I don't like Outlook. So I don't really have any thoughts about where to go. Did you install any plugins or add-ons?
With the Outlook?
Yeah.
Not that I'm aware of. No, yeah. I put in a whole fresh new copy. And because I had the older version, they let me migrate the data. Which
right.
That has some concerns. I wonder if it had to do with the migration.
Well, it might have. So it didn't do this before on 2011, but it's doing it now on 2015.
Correct. And my concern is I'm used to getting a new product and then running them side by side, so that I would buy another new Mac, and then I would, you know, do the backup
over there,
and I would know that everything is fine. And at least
and then you could transition.
I data in two places. I'm a little concerned wiping a hard drive and then, my Time Machine backup, you know, failed.
Yeah. In fact, I wouldn't rely on Time Machine for this. I mean, you could use Time Machine. It'd be the easiest. But make a secondary backup of your Outlook data files and any other data files you have. You know, you could just put in a USB drive or even a thumb drive. These days they're so big, 32 gig or 64 gig thumb drive, and copy that data over in addition to the Time Machine. That way you'll have two copies. But I do think that they're on the right track. There's something. Search uses indexing. The search is broken, basically, right? It's turning up too many or too few results. Mostly too many, it sounds like.
Yes, too many.
Yeah. And so we know that Outlook, the new Outlook, works with OS X. You've got, I presume, El Capitan or a recent version of OS X on there. So it's probably something's broken with the search. One way to try this, you know what I would do? I wouldn't reinstall the whole operating system. I would uninstall Office, all copies, old and new, and get as much of that out of there as you can. In fact, go into the application support folder in your library and make sure that the Microsoft folder's gone. You know, just drag it out of there. You don't have to delete it. Just drag it out of there. Back up your Office data, you know, your email, your contacts, your calendar. Make sure that's all backed up. And then uninstall everything, delete everything, and do as clean an install of Office as you can. And then import your data back in. I bet you that will fix it. And that way you don't have to reinstall the whole operating system. But you're right to worry. This is precious stuff. So one backup's not enough. In fact, the backup, if there's only one copy of anything, it's not a backup. That's your data. So have two copies at least. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm ready. Are you ready? So chat room has helped out a little bit with our last caller, suggesting some ways to maybe fix this problem. Turns out, and I did not know this, because I don't use Outlook. I hate Outlook. I hate it. I use Office, but I don't use Outlook for my mail or contacts or calendar. I like BusyCal. I like Busy Contacts for my contacts and calendar. And I use Apple Mail. Actually, I use a kind of a old-fashioned mail program called MailMate for my mail. And I prefer those to this bundled all-in-one thing. But I know a lot of people in business need to use Outlook, so I'm not going to hold it against you. But this is the kind of problem that crops up. Microsoft never has done things the Apple way with their Apple software. They always do it themselves, their own way. In this one case, they are, in fact, using an Apple facility for their searching. They use Spotlight, which is the built-in Apple indexer. It's probably a good idea. It's faster. It's native. It just works. So the chat room are thinking here. We had a confab. Is that Spotlight, the Spotlight index is corrupt, and that's the index you want to rebuild. So I'll put a link in the show notes, techguylabs.com, to two ways to do it. One, using drag and drop, but one I'd prefer to see you use, although it requires use of the command line, is a program called MDUtil. That this is an Apple-provided utility that rebuilds the index. And you can rebuild the index using that command. We're going to put an article in here that explains what to do step by step. And using that command and rebuilding the Spotlight index, I would bet you would fix this. The reason you log into a different account on a Macintosh and it goes away is that index is tied to your account. So you go into a new account and it doesn't have that problem. That tells me that's what's going on. Greg's on the line from Conifer, Colorado. We're back in the hills.
How you doing?
I'm great, Greg. How you doing?
Fine. Hey, listen, Leo. I have it's either Direct Connect or Drobo file transporter unit in Conifer, Colorado.
And yeah, they sold it. I was really bummed. They sold it to some other company. Yeah. I hope they keep it going because I love file transporter.
I do, too. I've got a Drobo NAS, and as far as I'm concerned, they're both great. The other unit is in Tampa.
Yeah, see, that's nice. So you synchronize in Conifer, you synchronize in Tampa, and one nice thing about these transporters, they can synchronize with each other. So now you have a really nice backup system, and you own it all. It's none of it's in the cloud. It's all on your servers.
Well, here's the thing. I'm, at this point, I guess I've got to say paranoid about ransomware in particular. And my question is, should I, whether it's in Colorado or Florida, get an infection? We have networks in both places.
Yeah.
Okay? Several,
so most ransomware now will look and go out over the network and look for network-attached drives and encrypt them.
Will it be able to hop? What I have in both locations is a backup software that will back up certain folders. Not all of them, but certain folders and documents. What's up to the transporter, and then of course it's backed up between the two locations.
So no, the software itself, the ransomware, will not get to Florida, or vice versa.
That's what I want.
Go over. But here's potential problem: if you're backing up encrypted files, those will. So the infection won't. But you want to, if soon as you, the risk is, and this is true for all backup solutions, you need something called versioning to prevent this problem. If you have one and only one backup copy and your backup program backs up your data encrypted, you're done. It means it's encrypted on the backup as well as locally.
What I do is two things. I have, on the network in Florida, I have several NASs that are on timers. So they turn on for a certain period of time. The backup program backs up to them, and then they turn off. So if there's, and it's about once a week. So, you know, if it becomes infected.
You're fine.
There's that. And then I also have Carbonite, which.
And that's the solution. Carbonite, in fact, has a white paper. If you go to their Carbonite site and you do go to their like research section, there's a white paper. And this is what it says. Is versioning is the key. Because if you get your encrypted file backed up, that's okay because you can go back to the previous version, which is not encrypted.
They told me, and when I talked to them over the phone, they said they maintain 12 versions.
Yeah, on Windows only. Alas, they don't do this on Macintosh, but fortunately there's no ransomware issue on Macintosh at this point. So, but for Windows, yeah, that's beautiful. That means you can go back one, even two versions, even three if you had to, and there's going to be an unencrypted version of it.
So So long as when if and when ransomware were to infect the computer, its presence would announce itself fairly
quickly. And if you're using the computer, it would. You would know pretty quickly. But you're right. If you got ransomware in Florida and you're here and you never use that computer, thing is, that's unlikely because the way you get ransomware is something you did. You downloaded something or you clicked a link in an email. It would activate pretty quickly. Remember, the ransomware creators, the bad guys, want you to know. They're going to pop up a thing as soon as it's encrypted. They'll encrypt ahead of time.
Reading about Samsung and some of the commercial server versions of ransomware, though, I gather that it sort of hangs out for a while.
Yeah, that's something.
But it
doesn't hang out. The thing is, it's the minute it's encrypted, you're going to not be able to open your files. You'll know.
Yeah.
But the hangout is usually it sits there and doesn't encrypt for a while, and then it encrypts. As soon as it's encrypted, it wants to let you know because it's going to start a timer, and it wants you to start. Send them money. So versioning is the cure for ransomware. Also, not real-time backups would help as long as you caught it before you started the backup.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
versioning is the best solution to this.
Yeah. Well, I will sleep better. But thanks very much and have a good rest of the day.
You too. Thank you. Yeah, I'm glad you asked. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. Don't forget we got a great website, techguylabs.com. If you go there, you will find answers to the questions, suggestions, and you don't have to shout at the radio anymore. You can put your better idea in the website. No sign up. It's free. TechGuyLabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. And we go to Brett in New Jersey. Hello, Brett.
Hey, Leo. How you doing? I just have a question, two questions. First question is, where can I get a generic internal SSD hard drive, 1 terabyte, but just something generic? It doesn't have to be a brand name.
Unfortunately, there are. I don't think anybody does generics. Is it for a Mac or a PC?
A PC desktop.
I would go to Newegg. They're my favorite vendor, and just look for SSDs. The good news is the prices have dropped. White box generic hard drive. I don't think you can get them. But you kind of want to get a good one. My strong recommendation is for the Samsung EVO SSDs, the 950, and they're not expensive. There are no budget SSDs, is I guess what I'm saying.
But the EVO doesn't make a 3.5 internal, do they?
I don't know.
Okay, because
I don't know. Most SSDs are, Those EVOs, the EVOs I've used are like, look like little SO DIMMs. They look like memory cards, but that's because they're designed for the M.2 slot. I'm pretty sure they make them in a variety of form factors. It's just putting it in a case.
Okay. My next question is a non-tech question. I want to know where you get your salad shakers from.
The local market. You see me. I should explain that even though we're on the radio, I do a video stream of the show because I'm so beautiful that everyone should see me. No, because I don't know why we do a video stream. It doesn't make any sense because I really have a face for radio. But in watching, I think because people want to see things like, what are you eating right now? Anyway, if you want to watch that, it's at our website, twit.tv. We put it on the show, on the webpage after the fact, techguylabs.com. It's on YouTube. So, and you probably noticed that we do the show during lunch hour in California. It's 11 to 2 in California. So I usually try to maintain my strength. You know, this can be quite draining. So across the street, we have a little Petaluma market and they make these. But I tell you what, I make my own. So here's what I would recommend. Go to Pinterest, or as my friend Paul Thurrock calls it, pinterest.com. Look up mason jar salads, and you'll see many, many posts, because that's really what I ended up doing, is making them myself. And the trick.
Does Amazon have them?
I bought the mason jars on Amazon, but you need the recipe. Here, I'll tell you the recipe in a nutshell. It's anything you want to put in it, but you're going to put the dressing in first. That's going on the bottom. So whatever comes after that should be stuff that can sit in the dressing. Tomatoes, onions, beans, anything that you like in a salad that could sit in the dressing. And then that's going to insulate the next layer up, which will be lettuce, vegetables of some kind, right? You don't want them sitting in the dressing. Now, then I make six of them at a time. You put them in the fridge. I got six in there right now. They're beautiful. They sit there, and then you just bring them to work, shake them up, and you got a delicious salad.
They don't cost much, right?
No, because, I mean, the ones at the market cost a lot. These are $5. That's why I ended up making my own. $4.50 for, like, an 8-ounce cup of salad. That's crazy talk. So, no, if you make them yourself. I lost 25 pounds eating these mason jar salads. Thank you, Dr. Furman. I'll tell you what. Jay is in Providence, North Carolina, our next, in fact, I think last caller of the day. Hi, Jay.
Hey, Leo, you did so well describing what my call is going to be about. I'm trying to think of a good
way. Well, cookies. The name cookies is a kind of a cute name. What they really are, and what this started with the earliest browsers, with Netscape, back in the mid-90s. Remember when the first browser you used, Netscape, or maybe before that, Mosaic? The people who designed the browser said, oh, this is great. So a browser lets you go to content on the web, look at it, maybe return to it another day. What we need is, you know, when you play a video game, you save your game so you can go back to it. So what we need is a way to save information about our last visit so that when we go back, we can go to the same page. Maybe if you logged in, it'll remember it's you and you won't have to log in again. Things like that. We call that in the tech business state information about the state of the browser when you left that website. You save that. In fact, the real name for cookies is persistent, that means it lasts, client-side, that means it's on your browser. You're the client, website's the server. Persistent client-side state information, PCSSI. That's a cookie. Cookies make it a little bit more playful. But that's the idea. It's like saving a game in a video game. Now, cookies had a bad rap because, unfortunately, along with all the stuff that's useful that it saves, sometimes a website will save a unique identifier that knows it's you, and sometimes they'll share that identifier. Worse, sometimes you go to a site with banner ads. That banner ad is actually a separate site that is embedded on the first site. It's what we call a third-party site. They can also save a cookie. And then they can use that cookie to identify you as you go to other sites and say, oh, look, Jay was just on the Starbucks site, but now he's on the Pete's Coffee site, and then he's on the Tim Hortons site, and the guy likes coffee. Maybe they'll start serving you ads about coffee. Or maybe if you ever go to the Maxwell House site, they say, hey, stop buying that Starbucks coffee, start buying our coffee. And people worry about that. That's privacy, a concern for privacy. The sites kind of know where you've been. And the only reason that happens, normally cookie cannot be shared with another party. So if you go to the Starbucks site, only Starbucks can read the cookies from that site. The problem is these ad banners have their own cookies, so they can follow you as long as they have the same company has ad banners on the sites. And so that scares people. In general, here's what I recommend. In every browser, there's a setting to turn off third-party cookies. You want to save the first-party cookies. You want Starbucks to know what your favorite drink is. You just don't want others to know it. Third-party cookies are the privacy hazard. So all browsers will let you disable those, and it's probably a good idea to do that. I don't think it's a huge privacy leak because, in a way, I prefer to have ads that are relevant to my interests. If I'm a coffee drinker, I don't want to see ads for tea. So in a way, I think that this is actually I think of it more as customizing your ad experience. But if you don't like it, turn off third-party cookies. What you should not do is use an anti-cookie device or delete your cookies, because a lot of that stuff is stuff you want. If you don't want to have to log into Facebook each and every time you go to Facebook, you need cookies. That's how Facebook does that. And they're safe in the sense that first-party cookies belong to the site that created them. No one else can see them. So the privacy is protected there. So there was, for a while, people were very nervous about cookies. In fact, some antiviruses will warn you about tracking cookies. not something to worry about. If you are concerned about privacy, disable third-party cookies. That's sufficient, in my opinion. Hey, thanks to Nathan Staten, our musical director. It was a good question. Thank you, Jay, for calling in. Thanks to Kim Schaffer, our phone monitor. She's in charge. Thanks to all of you for being here. Couldn't do the show without you. I hope you have a great Geek Week, and I hope you'll come right back here. Remember, Tech Guy Labs all week long. TechGuyLabs.com. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you next time.